Welcome to Toadstools and Garlic Cloves. I am your host, Dorothy, joined monthly by my co-host, Samantha, and I invite you to join us as we hunt down cryptids, explore the paranormal, and dive into lore from around the globe. So sit back and relax as I lead you on a weekly adventure of this strange and creepy world that we call home.
Hey guys, it's your editor. So normally our lovely hosts, Sammy and Dorothy, are pretty good about saying, where in the world are we? But this time they didn't. So where in the world are we today? We're in Vermont, our home recording state. Anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed the podcast. I'll be talking to you a little bit later on.
Okay. Did you want to do your ghost stories?
Yeah.
And I do mine?
Sure. I'll start with my personal ghost story. Ooh, this is real exciting. So I went to school at UVM, University of Vermont. You know this, but our fans don't know this. So I'm saying it. So yes, I went to UVM. I lived the first 2 years in a place called Converse Hall, which is the oldest of the dormitories at UVM. And currently, it's kind of been like boxed in by all of this new construction. I haven't seen it in a while, but like now you can't even get to it because it's just like wrapped around by a bunch of different dorms, as well as the hospital. But when I went there, it was really nice because it was just like Converse, the hospital, and then on the other side was a nice big green, which now is all taken up by new dormitories because UVM wants to make more money. But anyway.
Not this year.
Not this year. So there is a ghost in Converse Hall, which there should be, being the eldest of the dormitories. This ghost is named Henry. He was a medical student, and he committed suicide in the attics of Converse Hall. Henry, for some reason, likes left shoes, so he'll just like steal your left shoe every once in a while. And he does like the basic stuff, like the whistling, the moaning, the wind noises, causing drafts that aren't really there if you're like all the windows are closed and somehow your door still opens. What is interesting about Converse Hall is that there are no real common rooms. Like the common rooms are the attic and the basement. And so, you know, trying to chill out in the attic with the ghosty noises. And also, it's just, oh God, I loved Converse Hall. It was such a weird place. Like, the common rooms were the entire top and bottom stories of Converse Hall, which technically has three wings. I was in the middle one, which is the east wing. It's not really a wing, but like the east, I was in Converse East. And then there's Converse South and North, and never the two shall meet. I was trying to like quote something, but it didn't really work.
I hope they wouldn't.
Well, no. So like you could only access the North and South towers from East Tower from the attic or the basement. So that makes these like really weird, narrow, like, I mean, narrow, like a very large person could not fit through these.
Okay. Thank you.
It's very narrow hallways. It's very narrow hallways, like maybe like 2 feet across that you would like wind your way through. And it was just like really fun to just creep through them because you feel like you're like sneaking around. But whatever. Henry used to hang out in those. And apparently he killed himself in one of the like extra rooms up there. So that's Henry. He once stole one of my shoes, and by he, I mean one of my friends stole one of my shoes and told me Henry did it.
So, first of all, it sounds like a fire hazard. Maybe Henry is there to warn you.
Yeah, I liked Henry. Henry and I, like, we were tight.
Oh. We used to have a dog that would steal all the left shoes.
It's interesting. What is it about left shoes that canines
apparently ghosts and dogs like left shoes.
Yeah, good for them.
Well, my ghost experience here is not as exciting as that. Oh, no, when I first moved up here, I was renting a room down in Richmond.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Richmond. And the person that I was renting the room from, it was his house. He was like, yeah, like an elderly couple used to live here and one of them died and haunts the place. But then there was another ghost that was here before that. Sometimes they don't like women. And I was like, okay,
thank you.
Thank you for telling me this a month after I moved in. But I was up in my room. I was asleep, of course.
Yeah.
And out of a dead sleep, I got woken up by the words, excuse me, right in my ear. And I like flipped over, turned on the light super fast, and there was like no one there.
That is way more exciting than Henry.
But then I was like, okay, I'm not going to go to sleep with the lights off for like a month. But yeah, no, that was my only ghost story here in Vermont. I'm glad that this house is not haunted. I know for a fact it's not haunted.
Good.
Don't tell me anything otherwise.
I mean, I don't remember anything. I don't think Keith's mom died there, so, you know, we're good.
I don't think so either.
No, I think she's actually still alive.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, I don't think this place is haunted.
No. Just old. That's fine.
Because I get paranoid in my own mind, not in a haunted house, so. Yeah. I have 4 stories from Sam.
Okay. Did you want to dive into those first, or did you want to talk about the vampire panic of New England?
I want to talk about... Let me talk about the ghost stories from Sam, since they're super short, and then we'll go into the vampire panic of New England. I like it.
Sounds good.
Okay. So... I actually thought you were going to do Emily's Bridge, but then you didn't.
I didn't.
And I was like, oh, that's amazing. Because it's like the second thing that people talk about when it comes to, like, it's like UVM and then Emily's Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
So Sam, who everyone on the podcast is listening, is my boyfriend.
He also does the editing.
Yeah, he also does the editing. So there's a Sam and a Sammy.
Yeah, that's not confusing at all. Everything's fine.
Oh, they're going to love it. So Emily's Bridge, if anyone doesn't know what that is, they can look it up. just a haunted bridge. It's fine.
It's a bridge that Emily haunts. It's fine.
Yeah, she killed herself off of it. It was fine. Jumped off, drowned. So one of his friends went to Emily's Bridge and they flashed their headlights 3 times, which is supposed to signal Emily to appear.
Thanks.
They waited for 15 minutes. Then one of the guys in the car said, come on, Emily, show us something. And then suddenly a face appeared pressed against the windshield, like in the front, the way that they do, like in the scary movies. And then she did that thing where you blow on the glass. And then shot right up into the sky.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Emily got a little peevish, it sounds like.
I mean, if someone's yelling at you, you don't know what they were doing. Maybe they were in the middle of, like, making their, like, ghost sandwich. I don't know.
Yeah, and someone poor Emily. All she wanted to do was die.
Well, she wanted to get married or something. But... that didn't happen. I'm probably messing up this entire story.
I feel like I used to know the Emily story, but I don't anymore. I'm sorry, Emily.
I thought I did too, and I didn't. Then there's another one called Shard Villa,
mm-hmm.
which is an old folks home. And apparently, so Sam used to be a guard there, and he would talk to the residents and things like that. And apparently a person really wanted to write a book about a haunted house in Vermont, and Shard Villa looks like a haunted house, like picture perfect.
Uh-huh.
And so he went in and asked the residents about anything that was haunting the area, or if there were any weird going on, and the residents all said that the place wasn't haunted. But, there's always a but, the author took quotes, misquoted them from the residents, mashed them together, and basically sent, like, wrote a book about a haunted house that was not haunted.
Huh.
So now the house is really, really famous for being haunted, and it's not.
That's funny.
So, there is that.
It's like an anti-ghost story.
Yeah, so I think everyone knows that that place is not haunted.
Mm-hmm.
And, the Vermont Police Academy is haunted also.
Hmm.
So, that used to be a tuberculosis clinic.
Okay.
Yeah, I just said tuberculosis, weird.
consumption, whatever.
The consumption got me. No. There is a ghost sighting in just about every class. So every class, academy class that goes through, there's at least one person that sees Mary, who used to be a nurse there. She'll just walk down the hall, and she's a woman in white. Sometimes she'd banging around doing things. And there's also the patient call buttons that are in some of the dorms still. And it's kind of like a challenge to push the button and see if Mary shows up.
Mm-hmm.
Which Sam said that when he was there, he never saw her. But he also said that he tries not to believe in this stuff because he worked night shifts. And it's just not good for guards to be skittish.
Be afraid. Yeah.
So it makes sense. That's fine. And then the last one that he talked about was Northland's Job Corps, which used to be an army outpost. And on the night shift, one of the guards that worked there saw someone walking down the security route, so the route that the security guards would always take. So he drove over to the thing that they saw, and it was a Union, soldier just marching. So the guard pulled up next to him and asked him what he was doing, and the soldier just turned to him, looked him in the face, and then disappeared.
Okay.
And I don't know what I would have done if that would have happened to me. that's the end of the story. It's just like,
I also don't know what I would have done if that had happened to me. Maybe, driven home as quickly as possible, and
I can only think of two things I would have done. I either would have denied that until I got home, or ran away screaming and quit my job.
Yeah, one of the two.
Nope, none of this happened.
Giant nope.
Hey everybody, it's Sam the editor. So I know you're all going to be wondering what exactly this guard did when he saw a ghost just dematerialize in front of him. Basically, the guy had been working security for so long that he kind of just continued on with his shift. He had seen plenty of weird stuff, so, no big deal. maybe later we'll be doing an episode where I just tell you guys all the weird stuff I've heard while working night shift security and just been like, no, that can't be a ghost because I'll never work again. But anyway, enjoy the podcast. Have fun.
There is that. Those are all my stories.
Those are fun. Thank you, Sam.
Yeah. I'm just gonna be like, you told him all wrong.
It's fine. He can just voice edit himself and be like, actually, this is what happened.
Yeah, he would totally do that.
And then everyone would be very shocked, and he'll just pretend he's one of us, and we'll be like, yeah, we totally modulated our voices to sound like a giant albino man.
One of us. Now you just called him out, so anyone that lives in Vermont knows exactly who he is. A guard, giant albino man named Sam in Vermont.
I mean, could be anybody.
Oh, really? It could be.
Could be me.
I mean, you are
not a guard,
but pale.
I'm very pale.
Okay.
So, did you know that the Great New England Vampire Panic was a thing? Like, those are all cap letters. Like, that's a thing. It's an era in history.
I did not
The Great New England Vampire Panic. I feel like we might be able to go into this deeper because there was a whole lot of other stuff, like, from other states. But in Vermont in particular, apparently, we were a lot more, like, excited about it. Like, we would make exhumations festive affairs. Because that was one of the main things that we would do. That people would do during the vampire panic in New England is it was a big thing to exhume the bodies and check them out and see if, you know, they had fresh blood on them or whatever. Generally, it was just to decapitate them or burn their inner organs and eat the ashes. But we'll get there.
Wait, you're probably going to answer this, but in New England, did they put the stakes through their faces or their, no?
I think they did. Some of them did. I think it was mostly decapitation that they would do. Or, a heavy stone over the grave. There was a lot of stuff that they could... The easiest thing that they did was they would just, turn the body over. So that, exactly.
The vampire will just crawl the wrong way. It's
yeah, they'll just crawl all the way to China. But Vermont was special because Vermont would have to-dos. And the article that I read believes that this was probably because Vermont was more communal. Like, it was less. I'm doing the thing. I'm sorry, Sam. Vermont was less populated and therefore more communal. If that makes sense. So yeah. Their graveyards were larger and had more towns involved in those graveyards. So they would, everyone would come. You couldn't have a private vampire slaying.
I mean,
it wasn't a thing. It was a public thing. One quote was Timothy Mead.
What era was this?
Oh, sorry. Yes. This was in the mid-1800s. Late 17 to 1815 or so. 50. Because this quote is from 1793. At a heart-burning ceremony. Timothy Mead officiated at the altar in the sacrifice to the demon vampire, who it was believed was still sucking the blood of the then living wife of Captain Burton. It was the month of February, and good slaying, as in with a horse, horse and sleigh, not as Buffy.
I thought it was Buffy, February is a good slaying month.
I know, but
for vampires.
It was both. It's a double entendre.
It is. Do you think they did it on purpose?
I don't think so. No. But maybe we can pretend that they did.
Yes.
So then the article was basically saying it was because they were all bored and had nothing better to do.
I mean, makes sense. It was 1700s.
Mm-hmm.
1800s.
Yep.
Where are you doing then? I don't know.
But one vampire in particular was in the Corwin family. And this is 1834 to set the scene. Woodstock, Vermont. This is probably the biggest burning of the heart in the in the town green. Everyone was there. If you weren't there, you weren't a part of it. It was upsetting.
You weren't there. You weren't you weren't someone that they wanted us to achieve.
Everyone who was anyone was there.
Got it.
So this is the Corwin family, 1834. The eldest son, just, dies. Whatever. Probably tuberculosis, but he was really pale and had lost his appetite and wouldn't move around much during the day.
He was probably anemic.
I know, exactly. And then he dies, and they buried him in the cemetery. 6 months later, his brother dies, and everyone's like, oh shit now. That's two deaths in the same family. Must be vampires. This was, like, people were actually thinking this. Like, that was, like, the third thing on their minds was vampires. It must be vampires. They couldn't figure it out. It must be vampires.
Well, they had already dealt with the witches, so...
Yeah, this is about 200 years after the Salem witch trials, yeah. So... they dig him up, and it's all still there. Like, he's still there. You know, slightly decomposed because it's been 6 months.
Yeah.
But they autopsy the body, and the heart is engorged with flesh, with quote-unquote fresh blood.
Mm.
So obviously vampires. They take the heart to the green, and everyone burns it. And this was, like, the middle of the vampire craze. Because before this, there was one in, like, 1817, which was Frederick Ransom, which was a 20-year-old of a well-to-do family who died of tuberculosis, but everyone thought it was vampires because vampires. And they, I forget what they did with his body, but they just, I'm sure they just, like, burned his inner organs and hoped for the best.
Probably.
Yeah, there was some stuff about eating the ash of the internal organs, and breathing in the smoke, but mostly it was, like, decapitation and, like, turning the bodies over and panicking, just in general.
General panic. I like
general
it.
Panic. Yep.
Like, what's happening right now?
Pretty much. Except we don't like think it's vampires.
I mean, I think it's vampires. We should bring this back.
Probably is, really. It's probably just vampires.
I knew it. You knew it. You're the one who knew it. Are you standing?
I am standing. I have a new desk. It's a standing desk.
I'm jealous.
I made it. It's jankety, but it works. Yeah. So that's all I have on vampires.
Oh.
Unless you have any more questions, maybe I can remember things that I didn't write down.
So they said that when they pulled up that body, when they exhumed it, the Woodstock one, they said, hey, his heart is this engorged with new blood.
Yeah.
So during that day and age, they just thought that anything that you put in your mouth and sucked down went to your heart?
I don't think so. I'm not entirely sure if the engorged heart was real or if they were looking for an excuse. I think at that point they were convinced he was a vampire.
And they were just looking for, like, oh!
Exactly. Huh. So, yeah. I don't think that they thought that, like, that a regular human consuming food goes straight to the heart. I don't think they thought that. I think that they were beyond that kind of thinking.
Good.
But, you know, vampires are magical, and who the fuck knows, right?
Vampires are magical. That's why they are a creature.
Exactly. Creature of the night.
Yeah. Unless, of course, you're a Twilight vampire.
Yeah, that was weird.
It was something different. I like vampires, and I haven't heard of this. I feel like there should be plaques.
I'm sure there are in Woodstock. It would be in Cushing Cemetery, which is where the Corwin kid was buried. But yeah, it was a thing. I remember learning about this for in the high school class that I para in.
What, they teach it in class?
Yeah.
Oh.
She didn't really go into specifics about, I found more when I was researching it now than what she went into in the class. But yeah, I was in a Gothic Tales one semester course. It was great.
Is this high school? This is high school, right?
This is a high school.
My high school wasn't cool like that. We didn't learn any of that stuff.
I know, right? Mine neither. We had no classes that were that specific about anything. It was English or nothing. And by nothing, I mean you, like, failed because you had to take English.
Like, because I grew up in an old mining town, all, like, the county, like, when we had history classes, I guess we would talk about that.
But it would be, like, on Halloween. It would be, like, a one-day thing. Oh.
No, like, it was part of the history. Like, there was no hauntings or anything like that. It was just, like, oh, historically speaking, this is an old mining town. We had mines, and we had the river that people would pan for gold, and blah, blah, blah. It's, like, cool. Where are the guns?
Vermont is old. We have a lot of ghosts, I hear. Apparently, there's also a ghost horse that may be the reincarnation of Ethan Allen. That's all I have to say about that. That's all I can...
What?
It's a ghost horse.
Where?
It's wherever Ethan Allen used to be. Like, it's somewhere... like, the Ethan Allen homestead area.
Oh. I was like...
there's a stallion that, like, runs through the mists and... disappears.
I was just thinking like ghost. A ghost horse that followed the path of wherever Ethan Allen walked, like in his entire life.
Maybe? Who freaking knows?
All over Vermont just doing its thing.
Yeah, the article I found on that didn't really specify where the horse was. I was like, this is not helpful. But I just felt it was worth mentioning that there is a ghost horse. And it may or may not be the reincarnation of Ethan Allen, who is our state hero. We like him. Green Mountain Boys. Woo.
Okay. Ghost horse. Got it.
Ghost horse. And then my last ghost story was about old Isaac of the shanty on the shore, which is, have you ever been to that? It's a restaurant in downtown. Kind of like right off the bike path.
I was going to say, do you know what street it's down?
Oh, I forget. I should know. But it's you know where the train tracks are?
Yes.
Right next to it.
Yeah. I feel like I've seen it, walk by it.
Yeah, it's got the big lobster on it.
Yes. It's,
yeah, that's the shanty.
That's what you had to say.
Sorry. So old Isaac of the shanty, in the 1800s, the shanty was Lake Champlain Transportation Company. And it was basically just like a goods store that he would sell stuff. He was a merchant person. He wasn't that enthused about the business end of his life. He like did business, but didn't really talk to people more than he needed to. He had this one Irish boy who was also his companion, which I was like, his lover? I don't know. But
okay.
Like, that was the only person outside of his family that he, like, actually associated with. And then there was, like, a family that lived in the apartment above the store. And one day he's just like, I don't want to do business anymore. Business became, quote unquote, distasteful to him when he was around 50 years old. So he decided to invest more time in his other hobby, which he would do all the time, which was following funerals. He liked to just go to funerals, and he would go and follow the hearse and chill out by the graveside until all of the dirt was burying the body, and then he'd go home, and that was just what he did. That was his thing. He liked to follow funerals.
No. So, that's gonna be me when I turn 50.
No, he did this before he was 52. Everyone thought he was weird. It was just like that was all he did after he turned 50. He was like, I don't want to do business anymore. He literally just closed the doors. Everything's still on the shelves. Closed the doors. And he was like, no, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm just going to stick to following funerals. And then didn't really talk to anybody after that except for the funerals. And then when he died 30 years later, when he was 80, he asked for the store to be opened up. Moldy food and all. And he would have his body displayed at the counter as he was in life.
Like a deli spread around something?
I guess so. I don't know. And so that's where his wake was. That's where he had his viewing, was in his in the shanty. And everyone just came. Like, no one cleaned the place, apparently, because it was all full of, like, cobwebs and molding food and whatever else he had on the shelves. And apparently he never left. So, like, now restaurant staff say that he moves stuff around and rattles drinking glasses just for fun. I'm like, does he still go to funerals? Like, what does he do?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I would question that. Like, does he just follow funerals around? Like, if a funeral procession, like, goes down that street, does he, like, oh, wait for me?
I don't see why a funeral procession would go down that street, because I don't think there's any, like, I don't think there's a big residential.
Well, I don't know.
And also, maybe. It's not really any funeral homes or churches.
Oh. Okay. Yeah, this state is weird. I'm like, oh, in New Orleans, there's funeral processions going back and forth.
Yeah, I think that makes New Orleans weird.
No, I think that makes the entirety of the United States weird if they don't do it.
Okay.
I think that should be a thing.
You can bring it back. I don't want my body paraded around. I'm sure it's not looking too hot when I'm dead.
But it does, because the mortician fixes you up all nice.
Just for I'm making a very distasteful face.
We can close the lid.
I don't want formaldehyde. I just want to rot naturally, or just burn me. Do whatever the heck. I don't know. Whatever.
Okay. I'll plan. So Sam was talking about this because I was saying, like, I don't want to get burned. When I die, I just want to go be tossed in the ground and have, like, the things come out of me naturally. And
yeah,
like,
I want, like, a wine cloth or whatever. Not, yeah.
Yeah. And he was like, yeah, you should totally, like, place a seed in your chest. And then a tree would grow.
Nice.
And I was like, wait, don't they do those with eco-funerals? But they don't put the seed in your chest. They plant the tree on top of you.
Yeah, but your body still provides the nutrients for the tree to grow.
But it'd be really cool if, like, the tree sprouted out from you.
From your rib cage? Yeah, that would be good. That would be rad, man.
That'd be cool. Yeah, I like it. That should be a thing. That's ours. We invented that.
Awesome.
Oh. Okay. So we talk about vampires.
Yep.
I feel like they've been so overshadowed by witches in New England.
Oh, they have. Like, it was a real thing. 1800s New England. People were freaking out about the vampires.
Like, I would freak out more about the vampires than the witches.
They may have. I think that the witches thing kind of stays in our mind more because we killed people over it. Vampires, it was more distasteful, I guess, because it was just like, oh, they died, let's, like, mutilate their bodies.
Yeah, so it was just like, you didn't become a vampire until you're dead.
Yeah.
So once you died, then we could just start, you know, doing the iron thing and decapitating and...
Exactly.
Turning, like, them upside down.
Yeah, like, you can still see it in some old cemeteries. They'll have, like, the cages over them and everything.
Yeah.
Because it was a real fear. They were really afraid of the undead. And I think there was one woman, her name was Mercy Brown... She was in Rhode Island. I didn't really look into her that much because she wasn't Vermont, but I think she might have been the only like living person that they were really like considering to be or the most famous case of a living person that they thought was a vampire. I don't know. I might be misquoting this entirely, but yeah, I think it was mostly because it was just dead people. And so there was a lot less people being upset because they were killing people. It was just digging up your own family members and chopping their heads off.
Yeah, people probably don't want that part of history. It's like, oh no, we didn't do that. Europe did that.
Yeah, and it's not like court, like with witch trials and everything, there are like court records and stuff about that. With the vampires, it was more of a family affair.
Yeah, it'd be more of a family affair. And I know in Europe they find out whether or not people believed in vampires and things like that during those that time period because of this like the archaeological records and the ethnographic records. But yeah, I didn't realize New England was so diverse with their witches and vampires.
We're basically a mini Europe over here in New England.
Yeah.
Not all the shit.
You have cryptids, you have haunted forests, you have vampires, and you have witches.
Exactly.
I knew it. So, do you want to hear about the Bennington Triangle?
Of course I do.
Do you know anything about the Bennington Triangle?
I've heard that it exists.
Okay. Well,
but that's about it.
That's all I had. It exists. We're done.
Oh, cool. Does it exist in the same way like the Bermuda Triangle exists, or is it?
No. So the Bennington Triangle, let's see. So it was coined the Bennington Triangle in 1992 by Joseph Citro, which is an author, and he coined it on radio. And the triangle is an area of land in southwestern Vermont. And it's most famous for the number of people that went missing in 1945 to 1950.
Okay.
And it is said to share characteristics of the Bridgewater Triangle in Massachusetts.
So just don't go there.
Well, yes. Just don't go there. Some forests are just haunted and you just should not go there.
Sleep alone.
But before I get into this, I want to go ahead and do my whole references. Bennington Triangle. I listened to episode 67 of the podcast Lore.
Mm-hmm.
I watched Weird or What, season 3, episode 8. I went to BenningtonTriangle.com and LegendsOfAmerica.com, Bennington Triangle.
Cool.
Okay, now let's get into the story. Oh, it's going to scroll down super slow. Okay. So the triangle, this is really hard for me to find, is that this individual, Joseph, said it was a triangle, but it's not really a triangle. Ooh. It's centered on Glastonbury Mountain.
Okay. Glastonbury?
Did I say that right?
I don't know.
Glastonbury. Okay, well, most of the towns include Bennington, Woodford, Shaftesbury, and Somerset in the Triangle area. And there are a few ghost towns in there. But not as in there's ghosts in the ghost town. It is as it is a deserted town.
Okay, yeah.
But per Joseph Citro's book, strange things were happening before the 1940s. So Glastonbury Mountain is one of the highest peaks in Vermont at 3,748 feet, and it has about 27,000 acres that's mostly owned by the Forest Service.
Mm-hmm.
And it is told to have mysterious disappearances, UFOs, it's a cursed forest, and paranormal activity. What I'm going to go over are the mysterious disappearances, which is what's most famous for. The Cursed Forest, and not the paranormal activity, not the UFOs, because I couldn't find anything on those. But there's a what we call a Bennington monster.
Ooh.
So before I get into this, I wanted to say that this place was, there's lore from the Native American Algonquin Abenaki tribe.
Mm-hmm.
And they had stories about the mutton! No. They had stories about the mountains. So the top of the mountain is cursed. Hunters would always get lost there. The erratic winds that were up there would change direction every minute. And there's a legend of an enchanted stone that if you step onto this stone, you would vanish so quickly that you couldn't even scream.
Oh.
So in 1791, there were six families living on the mountain. After the Civil War, more people poured in and they saw the trees and decided that, hey, this would make a good sawmill town.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, they also added kilns for charcoal and were selling charcoal and trees. And economic growth equals more people. So in 1872, that equaled a railroad being put up there. One of the first reports by the European peoples who decided to inhabit the mountain was in 1892, reports, I should say, about weird things happening, was that a sawmill employee attacked a man and beat him to death and blamed it on the voices in his head.
Okay.
So they put him in an asylum, which he then escaped. And legend said that he went back to Glastonbury and lived out the rest of his days in the forest. So keep that in mind.
Okay.
Because that is a possible theory of what happened in 1897, mm-hmm. was that two brothers were out hunting. One got separated. Well, they both got separated. Mm-hmm. A gun went off. Cry rang out. One of the brothers was searching for other brother and couldn't find him until the following morning. There was a body laying under the tree, and the brother's rifle was laying beside him, loaded and just out of reach. And there was drag marks around, indicating that he wasn't alone when this happened and that he was murdered.
Oh.
And one of the theories was the forest itself, but also the fact that during that day, anyone, and even to this day, people can walk into a forest and live the rest of their life out there if they don't die. So they did think that it was possible that was the sawmill employee that attacked and beat the man to death.
Mm-hmm.
Then, in the 19th century, oh, actually, I went backwards. In the 19th century, a few decades before the murders, and this is also another theory, before the railroad, you could hike up the mountain or take a stagecoach. And of course, mm-hmm. these are dirt roads. So one rainy night, they left super late, and the driver was forced to pull over and stop and inspect the wheels of the stagecoach. And they noticed these large footprints around the coach.
Like human footprints or animal
footprints? Large footprints, shoeless humanoid footprints around the coach. And they saw that they vanished into the forest. And then they were inspecting, and then all of a sudden something slammed into the side of the stagecoach. And the passengers all came out of the stagecoach because they were probably afraid it was going to fall over.
Mm-hmm.
Which it did. And then a Beauty and the Beast moment happened where a shape just stepped out into the lantern light, standing on 2 feet. At least 2 heads taller than a grown man, covered in wet hair and eyes reflecting from the glare of the lantern. And that's the story of the Bennington monster.
Ooh.
But that, the reading that reminded me of, like, Beauty and the Beast, where Beast just, like, he just does the foot thing first.
Yeah.
Coming into the lantern light.
Come into the light.
Oh! Oh my god! But no, I get more into the Bennington monster later. But that's one of the theories, is that there is the Bennington monster, that the place was haunted, of course. The Abenaki tribe would not go on this mountain and just refuse to be around it, which, mm-hmm. honestly, any indigenous tribe tells me not to go to a place, I'm not going there.
No.
So, really, it was all their fault, everything that happened after this. Not the tribe. All the people that didn't listen. But by 1930, only 3 people remained in Glastonbury, which is considered a ghost town now.
Okay.
Let me get up to what the Bennington Triangle is most famous for. There are 5 disappearances,
mm-hmm.
between 1945 and 1950. So we had Mitty Rivers that disappeared in 1954, November 12th. That individual was 74 years old. They went missing on a hunting trip. They were an experienced hunter and a local guide. They were never found. And they disappeared along the Long Trail Road in Vermont Route 9, in an area that they are very familiar with that was called Hell Hollow.
Huh.
Then, almost a little over a year to that day, Paula Weldon disappeared in 1946, December 1st. She was 18 years old, and this was one of the most famous ones. She was hiking on the Long Trail. She was seen on the trail by an elderly couple. And when they rounded the corner that she took on the trail, she was just gone.
Ooh.
Yeah, just gone. And it was one of the biggest manhunts in the history of Vermont that was mounted. And she was never found.
Wow.
Then there was, to the day, 3 years later, James Tedford, 1949, December 1st, he went missing. But this one's a little weird, because this one, I didn't get an age. It was a veteran. He was traveling on the bus from St. Albans to Bennington, and he was on it that last stop. People saw him, the last stop between where they were in Bennington. They saw him on the bus, and when they stopped in Bennington, he wasn't there anymore. So he just disappeared from the bus. Then we have Paul Jeffson in 1950, October 12th. So a little bit less than a year later, was an 8-year-old that was in a truck with his mother. And the mom left him in the truck while she went to go feed pigs, which I'm going to say right now, growing up where I did, it was totally normal to leave kids in the truck while you wanted to do something.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely in the 1950s, that wouldn't have been unheard of. But she went to feed the pigs. The 8-year-old was alone for about an hour. He was never found. The bloodhounds traced his scent to a local highway, which was the same place that they say Paula Weldon disappeared. So along that Long Trail Road area. So that's mm-hmm. 3 people now. And then we have Frieda Langer. Now I have a theory on this one, but I'll let you see if you understand my theory after I explain it.
Okay.
So in 1950, October 28th, so that was like what, 16 days after Paul Jeffson went missing, this 53-year-old was camping on Somerset Reservoir with a family. They were out on a hike with a cousin, and the individual slipped and fell into the stream. They were fine. They told the cousin to wait while she just ran back to the campsite to change clothes.
Mm-hmm.
The cousin got worried by waiting for so long, came back, returned to the campsite, and discovered that Frieda never made it back. So, another huge search with volunteers, helicopter, over 300 searchers for over 2 weeks.
Oh, wow.
So, I don't think that the disappearance of Frida Langer had anything to do with the other four disappearances, just because they discovered a body on this one.
Oh, okay.
And the fact that it was so close to the fourth disappearance, I would think that this would be a copycat.
Mm-hmm. But like someone hoping to make it seem like it was the ghost or the whatever was going on in the triangle.
Monster or, yeah, something. So this was the only body to be discovered, and was discovered 7 months later in a field that had been extensively searched. And autopsy revealed nothing. So I think a lot of people don't think that that individual is part of the four that went missing, or maybe there is a theory that it could have been a serial killer that was working then, but again, it was male, female, age between 8 and 53 years old. That's a really...
Yeah, that's a big...
That's a wide scale for a serial killer. But, I mean, it could be.
Could be. Could be the Bennington monster. Who knows?
I mean, I have a few theories down here.
Mm-hmm.
But let me see. So, some of the theories, they were, of course, considering a serial killer. They were calling it the Bennington Ripper.
Ooh.
But that theory was discarded via lack of evidence. And I can understand that. I don't think it was a serial killer. I don't know what it was. Just the fact that lore did say this, so I'm kind of quoting them, that hundreds of people walk into a forest every year and disappear.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that is a death, whether that is just going off the grid.
Who knows?
Could be anything. So one of the other theories was the Bennington creature. So I was watching Weird or What. It's a show.
Mm-hmm.
It's really odd. It was like old, very old, like 90s show.
This is the best, though.
I know. It was a lot of like reenactments and things. And it was really cool. But it was like the Bennington creature. And they said it was a Sasquatch-like creature. There was many sightings of these creatures in the area, and they believed that it was a rogue male Sasquatch operating out of the norm of normal Sasquatch behavior.
I'm sorry.
I know!
Okay.
Yep.
All right. So it's a rogue Sasquatch, which is different from a normal Sasquatch, which is an oxymoron, but that's fine.
Apparently there's normal Sasquatch behavior, and this one was rogue. Okay.
Good to know. Okay.
And the reason why they thought it was this one was because of an incident that happened 20 years prior, so in the 1920s. A man named Albert was abducted from his campsite and held captive in a canyon for 6 days.
Huh.
So he escaped. So Albert lived.
Yay, Albert.
Told of his abduction by the Sasquatch creature. So.
Good for Albert. He made
it. The Bennington creature. So we have the serial killer theory. We have the Bennington creature theory. They threw in mountain lions as a theory, which I don't like, and I don't think that's even a good theory to begin with.
No, that doesn't sound good.
They said it matches the characteristics of stalking. Like, it doesn't, though. But then
they're just grasping at straws.
They were. You'll like this next theory, because I like it, and I want it to be real. Wormholes.
Yeah!
Yeah! Okay. So, of course, a wormhole, if anyone doesn't know what that is a tunnel between points in space and time. It's a wormhole.
Wormhole.
There's no limit to size that a wormhole can be made. At which point they started talking about a conspiracy theory of a wormhole that happened in the Navy with the Philadelphia experiment. Do you know what that experiment is?
Something about wormholes? I don't remember. I feel like I should know.
Well, apparently they took technology from Albert Einstein and Nikola Tesla and in the Navy. Because that's what we do.
Yep.
And basically what this wormhole theorist talked about was that, hey, this was like the Philadelphia experiment where the USS Eldridge disappeared in Philadelphia, then reappeared 100 miles away in Virginia.
Ah, fancy.
Which was a thing that happened. But then he worked it back to how it could have been a wormhole where people just disappeared.
Okay.
Which I want it to be that so badly.
Me too.
But it
means it probably isn't.
Most likely it was that they either had a killer or two, or maybe some of them just walked off in the middle of nowhere. Maybe mountain lion theory.
I doubt.
Maybe one was a mountain lion. Maybe the other one was a serial killer. Maybe one was just getting away with murder and blaming it on the Bennington creature. I don't know.
Maybe one was a child that wandered into a highway.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, I think that it's weird that it happened in that time period between 1940-1950, but I think that maybe Mitty Rivers could have, the first one could have just been actually dragged away by a mountain lion.
Yep.
Paula Weldon could have been attacked on the trail. It was a good-looking 18-year-old is what they said.
Yeah.
The veteran, I don't know what happened to him. Maybe he got off and stopped and people just thought he was there. Maybe he was a ghost already. I don't know. Paul Jepson, he's 8-year-old. He could have gotten picked up by someone or wandered off.
Yeah.
Rita Langer, I say they're just blaming it on the last four that went missing and got away with murder.
Yep.
So coincidences, maybe.
Yeah.
They just
happen to have happened in the same place.
Yeah, within a certain amount of years, and I just think people played off of other things that were happening.
Yeah.
I think that's actually all I got. Oh, wait. Bennington Wentworth named the town.
Okay.
That's it. Now I'm done.
That was it. That was the whole thing.
So, if you want to read more about the Bennington Triangle, you can read the book by Joseph Citro. And again, I don't know where this triangle is. Like, it all just happened in this area, but somehow it turned into a triangle.
Probably just to play on the whole, like, Bermuda Triangle thing.
I was thinking that it's a play on the Bridgewater Triangle, play on the Bermuda
Bermuda. Yeah. Bermuda.
Did you say Bermuda?
I don't freaking know.
The Barista Triangle, where there's just a ton of baristas there.
Yeah, exactly.
I like it. Triangles. Why not?
Yeah, they're all over the
place. Yeah, people talked about, like, they just blurbed it with, like, UFOs and paranormal activity, but I couldn't find anything on that. So I think they just kind of said, hey, all these things happen here, but we don't have record of anything except for the mysterious disappearances and the Bennington monster that might have been the beast from Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah!
So
we should marry him. We should marry the beast.
The beast! Oh, I was watching that the other day.
It's a good movie.
It is. I like it. It's a favorite.
Yeah.
I think I went over everything.
Yeah, I definitely went over my whole paper, my one piece of paper that I had notes on.
Good. Good. Keeping these nice and short.
Yeah.
People are probably like, no, you're not.
Sorry, Sam.
Sorry. Plugs. Crap.
Plugs?
Where can people find us? Instagram. So Toadstools and Garlic Cloves on Instagram. And then they can also send us email at toadstoolsandgarliccloves@gmail.com. Podcast.
Yeah, your favorite or, ghost stories. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Talk to us, but be nice about it or else we'll ignore you.
Where do you want us to go next? Let us know. We'll do that.
We'll think about it.
We'll where think about it.
Go? Where do you want to go? Anything?
Me?
Yeah, anything piquing your interest?
Not particularly. I'm kind of. The New England Vampire Panic is super fun if you want to look it up, but we also just talked about it. So.
Yeah, I feel like we should go outside of the... Do you want to do Mexico?
We can try Mexico.
You expressed interest in that island.
Bermuda? What?
No, the dolls.
Oh, that weird place. Yeah, the freaking... That creepy place with the dolls and stuff. Oh, man.
We can add that and then some other stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. That sounds good. I think we're done.
Okie doke.
Cool.
Sorry, I'm just sanding my desk because I have sandpaper right here and it's raw wood.